Hapwood is the oldest line of unfinished engineered flooring on the market. We believe the custom beauty of site-finished hardwoods and the stability of engineered flooring provide the best value for your customer. And it's 100% made in the USA. Call or visit our website to learn more at howellflooring.com. That's H-O-W-E-L-L flooring.com.
Hello, this is Michael Martin, President and CEO of the National Wood Flooring Association, and you're listening to our Real Answers podcast with Chris Izza, President of CNR Flooring in Boston. Good morning, Chris. Where in the world are you calling in from today?
Good morning. I am at World Headquarters in Massachusetts and excited about today's guest.
Very good. Well, speaking of our guest, today we're bringing back bowtie economist Elliot Eisenberg. Elliot joins us from Miami today, and he's going to provide us his take on the short-term and longer-term health of the economy. Good morning, Elliot. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be on.
Yeah, right on, brother. I get excited when you come on because I was speaking to Michael earlier about this, and I said, Elliot dumbs it down to a level that I can understand. And if I can understand the economy, then I can understand what to do with my company. So if I'm getting it, then I know our listeners are getting it. So thank you very much for coming on board today.
Happy to be on. Happy. And the timing is quite propitious. The Fed, you know, had a Fed meeting ended yesterday. So markets were happy and so on. So there's added stuff to talk about.
Yeah. So let me ask you about that because I saw this morning's post. And so my question is this. You commented that one, the Fed didn't have a rate hike and that, you know, that was exciting news for Wall Street. And so we had a record day. And did I interpret it correctly that you also said that we're probably going to see a downward trend or a shift down in rates sometime in the near future?
Yeah, we can argue when, but I think that there's a couple key things came out of the meeting yesterday. First, the rate hiking cycle's over. We've been waiting for this moment to happen. You know, the Fed last raised in July. And we know at some point they're going to stop raising and they're going to start to cut. Historically, 6, 7, 8, 9 months, something like that, from the last rate hike to the first rate cut. So when's that going to happen? Well, we aren't sure when it's going to happen, but we know the rate hikes are over. So the clock sort of now begins retroactively on July 26th. And now you say 8, 9, 10 months, you're looking at, I think Q1's too early. But it could happen as early as Q1. It's possible. I don't think so. The economy's still running too hot. But it's over. Next thing is going to be cuts. And the question is now how many cuts are going to happen next year. And the reason this is happening is a twofold reason, I think. The Fed's going to get something for nothing. The Fed's had bad luck. Rate inflation went really high. They said it was transitory. It turned out not quite to be so trans. But now inflation's weakening. And the threat of a recession is, I think, reasonably palpable here. So the Fed says, well, let's cut rates. No matter what happens, we'll do the right thing. If inflation falls and there's no recession, well, we can cut rates because inflation's falling. And if we, in fact, have a recession, well, we're telling markets we're going to start cutting rates. That's good for the avoiding or weakening or the power of the recession. So either way, they've made the right call.
Okay.
This is good news.
Thank you. When you say good news, I get happy.
They should have cut earlier. They should have told us this 3 months ago, but that's besides the point.
That's all well and good, and I agree. But so my philosophy over the, you know, now in my fourth decade of running a company has always been when we go through an economic decline, which is my preference versus the word recession, because recession scares so many people. But
yes.
My point is this. When we go through an economic decline, my philosophy is tighten the belt, be the company standing on the other side. If you're there when we get to the other side, that's when opportunity happens. And if you're poised and ready for it, your company grows and your profits grow. That's my view. So I feel like what you're saying is, no timeline here, but we are starting to see the beginning of the other side.
Yes. And the economy's weak. There's no question. Q3, the 5.2% GDP growth in Q3 was completely aberrant. It was just like a Mars landing. It was out of this world. And Q4 is going to walk in at 1.3, 1.4, 1.2. near stall speed, essentially, where unemployment doesn't get better. Maybe it tickles up a little bit, but we're seeing credit card uses down, you know, all these indicators, default rates are going up. I mean, this is not a great economy. So yes, right. Absolutely. Get yourself strong. Keep your capital structure in good shape. Look at companies you want to buy, people you want to hire, and you're going to have time somewhere in Q1, you know, somewhere in Q1, Q2 is when you're going to want to pounce.
Okay. So I can relate to that because I get calls from our listeners and they're like, look, I'm thinking about putting someone on, but you know, we're about to have January, February, which is historically slow in our industry. You know, should I do that? And I say, if you can afford to bring them on and don't be worried about carrying their cost, it's a great time to train.
Well said. But yeah, if there's some super saleswoman out there that you really thought would be a phenomenal addition, or some office manager or whatever it is, vice president, yes, don't hold back because of a 6 month or 8 month problem. You know, fearful that whatever. Just in 8 months when it's over, or 9 months when it's over, everyone's going to be chasing them. You'll have an edge now.
Yeah, but even take it. So let's bury in a little, drill in a little deeper for our industry in the field. So we might not be breaking records with how many floors we're sanding in the first 2 weeks in January. However, that means that our guys that are pumping out square footage can slow down on that living room, dining room resand and have the new guy with them and really take their time to train so that when Q2 works, our guys are ready to go and you've got more confidence in your new guy. So I want my peers out there to think, hey, go ahead and hire the guy if we think the economy is going to be coming back, because I want you to spend the time training them. So don't look at them as this cost that you can't afford. Look at it as we're literally investing in him being able to produce more in Q2 and Q3, which brings your money back. So your money's not really going away if that theory holds true.
Fair enough. That's right. And they're ready to rock and roll when housing starts and construction, commercial construction begins to recover and turn around and whatever it is. Absolutely.
Fair enough. Well, do you have any background on where NAHB is looking into 2024 housing and whatnot?
I think housing gets a little bit better. It's not going to, you know, shoot the lights out by any stretch of the imagination. But if you saw a 5 to 10% increase in housing starts, that sounds reasonable. Much more on the single fam side. Nothing's happening on the multifam side.
Right.
Multifam is really struggling right now. There's oversupply and rents are falling and vacancies up and cost of capital is higher. I mean, it's all bad. But on the single fam side, things are pretty good because everyone's locked into their 3% 30-year mortgage and no one wants to sell a house.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sure. Yeah.
Well, so the realtors are saying, well, we can't sell existing houses. So the builders are saying, well, we'll build new houses. They're building smaller houses. The prices are coming down a little bit because interest rates are so high. But
yep,
they're the marginal supplier now is new construction. New construction is now 30% of all existing homes all homes for sale, roughly 30% are new homes. Not because they're building so many, it's because there's nothing existing on the market.
Understood. Right. So, but that's opportunity for us in the wood flooring business because there's
absolutely
new houses.
It will get better. It will get better. Yeah. It's
okay,
just a little bit. Rates lower, big demand, good demographics.
Yep. Let me ask you this, and for those listening and driving along on your way to the job site this morning. So Elliot was, I think the first time we had him on the show was right when COVID was happening and shipping and freight China versus U.S. I mean, not China versus U.S., China to U.S. and Europe to U.S. was just, I mean, talk about going to the moon. So where are we now with that? I'd love to know. I know where it was. How's it looking now?
Well, it's funny you ask. So way back when, before COVID began, so think January of 2020, when COVID wasn't even a twinkle in somebody's eye, the cost of shipping something, a 40-foot shipping container, corrugated metal shipping container, from the east coast of China to California, Oregon, Washington, was $1,700, $1,800, $1,900. At the worst of COVID, think end of 21, somewhere around there, it was $17,000 or $18,000.
I know.
And now it's back to, believe it or not, roughly $1,700, $1,800. It's a little higher because of low water levels in the Panama Canal. So they're reducing the number of transits through the canal. So some ships are actually going to the Suez Canal or going around southern Latin America to avoid going through a canal. But that raises a cost because the containers, there are more containers on ships being moved around just because of the supply chain problems. But they're much cheaper. It's $2,400, $2,500 now. So it's way cheaper.
Yeah. So I've started to see, you know, during COVID, everybody talked about, you got your estimate and then there was the add-on, the additional for freight. And right. I have now seen that's gone away. It's every price list I've been receiving is landed to my door. No more additional freight. So that tells me it's gone back down. And you're Absolutely. Telling me you've seen it too. What about Europe to U.S.? Same thing? Because they don't have that canal issue.
They don't have the canal issue, right? It, the only issue, the constraint there is the fact that the shipping containers are on the ships longer because they're trying to bypass the Panama Canal. And the shipping companies themselves are trying desperately to jack prices up by shredding ships. They're taking ships, decommissioning them. They're grounding them in Pakistan and India, where they tear them apart and reuse what they can and not what they can't. But they're trying to reduce supply because they ordered all these ships back in 21 when they thought this was going to be a permanent state of affairs. So it tells you what they know. They know nothing either. They got the future completely forecast, completely wrong.
Well, I'm okay with it going back to where it was.
Yes, you know. And it will. It will, and it is. Absolutely. And I don't think there'll be any shakeout in the shipping container business either. Last time around, those massive mergers and acquisitions in the shipping line, and the number shrank from roughly 20 to about 10 or 8 or whatever. Now I think it stays at 8. Maybe one fails, but nothing major. There'll be no major upset. These companies will just suck in the losses for the temporary and move on.
Okay. So, again, for me, another indicator that we're closer to the other side and things are getting better.
Yes. Agree.
Yeah. And completely. At the same time, I don't want anyone listening today to think, you know, my interpretation is, you know, raise the flags and blow the horns because it's all fucking perfect. It isn't. It's still time to pay attention and watch your cash. But it's also time to look at opportunities in front of us.
Right, because there are going to be companies that are that will be overextended, that have overextended themselves, and the Vigoro is going to hit the Mixmaster at some point. And then it'll be your opportunity to swoop in. But 24, I mean, look, the housing market right now, housing starts, housing permits, new home sales, they're all roughly where they were just before COVID began. And that was the best level since, you know, 2006 or 2007, whenever the housing bust began, right? And things collapsed. Maybe it was 2008 was the bottom or 9, but this 2020, early 20, pre-COVID, it had gone up for 10 straight years. It wasn't unbelievably high, but it was fine. That's where we're going to be this year, somewhere around there. It'll be a pretty decent year.
Okay. So let me ask you this, because I mean, I'm not belittling myself, but I'm just a simple wood floor guy, and I'm happy that I've met with some success. But here's my question. I don't have a degree, you know, in economics from Harvard or BC or wherever, but I do have a long career of watching things happen. And my indicator is year over year sales, quarter by quarter matchups. And so if I could say last year, 2022, it was our most phenomenal year in the history of my company. And 2023, I had zero expectations of doing it again. But here I am, 2 weeks left in the year, and I am only $100,000 behind last year, year over year.
But the problem is, in your business, you only earn $200,000, so $100,000 is a third of your income. I'm kidding.
That's okay, but I leverage everything, so I got money to burn. But so my question is, I mean, $100,000 at our level, which is, you know, that $4-5 million level, $100,000 at our level, I call that, you know, a repeat. essentially.
Well, that's just rounding error numbers. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So if I'm repeating last year, do you have any flavor to think? And I literally was doom and gloom saying, I'm not going to repeat this in 2023. And here I did.
I think what's more impressive about your number is New England has not been, is not one of the hotter markets. Like the South is where housing starts are going to be strongest. The West is where they're stronger.
So I agree
an area that's a little harder.
I agree about that. If we're talking volume in housing, but C&R Flooring's not a row house builder. You know, I'm not out there doing neighborhoods. I'm doing crazy large houses with people who have helicopters in their backyard. So those people live in the Northeast. Although I'm sure we get some helicopters in Texas.
You know? California, Florida, those are the markets where you're going to get the super expensive houses, right?
Exactly.
New York, Boston. But Boston clearly has its share of very expensive houses and the Cape and so on.
Yeah, Newport. So,
Newport also, yeah.
Yeah, so there we are. I guess my question was, I could be a little optimistic and think 2024 yes. could stay the same way and we could keep going.
I really do. I don't see 24 being meaningfully different, marginally better. I think flat a little better than 23 because rates are going to come down. You're going to have a secular decline in interest rates over the year. We can argue how much. We can argue when they start. But, you know, the 10-year treasury is now right around 4%. The 2-year treasury collapsed last couple of days. Interest rates are coming down.
So, okay.
Unlike last year when they went up in 23, they generally went up the whole year. You know, now they're going to generally be coming down. So that's going to be an added boost. This is a tailwind.
Okay. I want to take advantage of having, a person like you on a call that I can ask certain questions. This is a question, if I brought it up out to dinner with friends, none of us know the damn answer. So my question is this. I've always had a theory. We're in an election year.
Yep.
So I always think that administrations do everything they can to keep the economy super strong so they can stay in office. Is there any truth to the, election being driving forces behind the economy? And is there something we can count on?
There's a little bit of that historically. You look at the political science literature and some old economics literature, yes. Is President Biden trying to do what he can? Yes. I think the area you see it clearly or most clearly is in student loans, where President Biden really has tried hard to eliminate, reduce, ameliorate, delay repayments on student loans. The Supreme Court has stymied him in general. Nonetheless, he's been able to do some stuff at the edges with firemen and police, I think, and teachers. There's been some areas he's been able to reduce, but that's really it. I think this election
infrastructure spending.
Yeah, that's a couple of years old, and those bills were passed like some years ago already. The bipartisan infrastructure bill was passed during Biden's first year in the White House. That was done in 21. But last year they did pass the CHIPS bill and the IRA bill, the green energy bill. So that's certainly going to help us this year a little bit. But you're going to have compensating effects here. Student loans do have to be repaid and so on. So I think the big problem we face with this particular election cycle is as follows. It's going to be a close election again.
Mm-hmm.
And close elections generally aren't great for the stock market or bond market. They're not good for the investment decisions, physical investment decisions, because no one knows what's going to happen. If Biden wins and the things stay the way they are, okay, we know what policy is. But maybe Trump wins and the Republicans get the House and Senate. Oh, then tax cuts are going to come in. That's going to be great. So investors will be happy and business people will be happier. Because we don't know come March, April, May, if it's as close as it remains, people are going to pull back and just, I'll wait 6 months and see what happens. That's going to be a bad thing. That's
fair enough.
I want to see a gap develop between President Biden and President Trump so we can have some notion of what's likely to transpire instead of being completely unaware.
Okay. So we're still in a wait and see there.
That's not good for the economy.
No.
A bit of a mile drag.
Okay, I can hear you on that one. And so here's the next question that would have come up with dinner amongst the meeting of the minds.
Right.
And that is, we've got two wars, essentially right now, in Ukraine and Israel.
Yeah.
Do you have any opinion on how that directly affects our U.S. economy, other than the obvious plywood in the Ukraine?
It's pretty tangential. We we've given Ukraine about $100 billion from what I can tell so far. I mean, as an aside, we should be, as a foreign policy issue, we should be supporting both these countries and Taiwan, because these are allies of the U.S., democracies, you know, or growing democracy in Ukraine's case. And if we don't support our allies, we look really weak around the world and the U.S. becomes a paper tiger. But that's an aside. Economically, this is very small chump change. In a budget of $6.4 trillion, you know, $100 billion over a year, it's rounding error. It's budget dust.
So I don't need to put too much. I don't need to put too much stock in it, you know, affecting our on our soil so much.
Correct. And I think the more we support them there, you know, Ukraine fighting off Russia, an enemy of ours, Israel fighting off Hamas, which is Iran, essentially in drag, an enemy of ours, and Taiwan keeping China hopefully at bay. This reduces our potential expenses down the road if something gets really hot. I mean, if Russia invades Moldova, for example, which is a NATO country, or certainly the Baltic countries, that gets very expensive very quickly. That becomes a much more burdensome cost. So whatever we're spending now is going to be way cheaper than what it will be if it gets worse.
Fair enough.
We want to keep these countries safe. The only way to make money on this would be to, and I think it's already been done, is the increased value of defense stocks. So in Britain, BAE or Rheinmetall in Germany or Lockheed Martin here in the States, these firms are going to have a bit of a field day selling, you know, man pads and RPGs, rocket-propelled grenade launchers, rocket-propelled grenades, and other types of munitions.
Where do you think we're heading, not just this year, but over the next 3 years? What do you think is going on? And do you see something down the road that maybe we need to be thinking about?
I think things look actually pretty good. I'm really a reasonably optimistic guy here. There's a likelihood of a recession coming. I don't think it's going to be a particularly bad one. So don't sit there and think this is a repeat of 08, 09, or if you're old enough to remember 81, 82, or if you're like a grandfather, 74, 75. Those are ones that stick out. This will be an ordinary, regular recession. Think 2000s, you know, that's the dot-com bust, or 1990, the SNL crisis. They weren't great recessions. Don't get me wrong. You weren't jumping up and down, but they weren't horrible either. So the likelihood is pretty high there'll be a recession despite the falling rates. Maybe because the falling rates is telling us that there's likely to be a recession. The bond market's been telling us. Beyond that, look, population growth is, immigration's picking up a little bit. This depends to some extent on politics of next year's election. Obviously, Republicans are more leery of immigration. I think legal immigration is what I'm talking about here, not illegal. We need legal immigration desperately for our economy. If we can get it, this would be a great, unambiguously good thing. We have increased labor productivity. Supply chains have improved. I mean, there's a lot of pretty good news here. There really is. I'm not saying this is going to be nirvana by any stretch of the imagination, but yeah, this looks okay. As long as these wars don't metastasize and some terrible thing doesn't occur, yeah, we're okay.
Well, here's again, my interpretation of all that is, so for you new guys out there, your company is 5 years old, 10 years old. What he's talking about back in the 80s, that's when I opened. And then again in the 2000s and then 06, 07. So C&R Flooring lived through every one of those, and we were a lot smaller than we are today. And one of the things that got us through it was that very fact that we were smaller, so our costs were lower. But if Chris Zizza flunking out of Plymouth State with a 0.56 and starting C&R Flooring can survive those economic declines, then so can you guys while you're out there. It's again going back to the simple principles of being the best professional you can be, always watching your costs and understanding them and buying as well as you can.
And great customer service.
Oh, that's the paramount one. That one's got to be first. And you're absolutely right. Customer service. When the customer wants it, you've got to get it to them. The guy out there who's saying, F them, I'm not going to do that. Well, the only thing you did in refusing to do it is create an opportunity for your competitor.
And explain, I think it's really important to explain to the customers why things are so expensive. Because they'll think back, oh, the last time I did this or the last house I bought and renovated or something, the cost per square foot was X and now it's 2X. you've got to explain to them, look, things have changed. The world is different. Transportation costs, labor costs, insurance costs, shipping costs, installation costs, everything is more expensive now.
Yeah, and everybody knows
empathize
that.
Empathize with them. Empathize with them, but explain it and be clear. Right.
Yeah. So do you want a new floor or not, lady? I like it. Let me ask Elliot real quick. Elliot, how do the guys get to hear more about you? I know I subscribe to the blog. Can you tell our guys how they could?
Well, thank you very much. And yes, if you want to receive from me every single day, 5 days a week, 70 words on economics or less, no graphs, no ads, no charts, no links, and no photos, the easiest way, text the word bow tie, one word, B-O-W-T-I-E, one word, to the five-digit number 66866. I repeat, 66866. You'll be prompted for an email address. So it's bow tie to 66866. You prompted for an email address. You'll give it to me. You'll hit return on your phone. You'll hear from me every day until you die.
Huh.
And hopefully you'll laugh and learn along the way.
You definitely will, guys. You definitely want to do that because Monday to Thursday, you're going to get real hard facts about your everyday economy that you need to know. And then Friday is the Friday file, which I always look forward to. It's something fun. And, you know, keep that formula. We enjoy it. Everybody. Yeah, no, it's terrific. And so, guys, thanks for listening. Elliot, thanks for being on. And as always, guys, be the best professional you can be. Keep it real out there. Have a great day.